And welcome everyone to Rock M Radio. This is a brand new live broadcast, specifically for our Rock M Plus subscribers, of Dive Cuts. We're on season 7. As you can see, if you're watching us on YouTube, hello. I am your host, Sam Snelling. We don't know where Matt Harris is these days. He's getting ready for a giant trip. He was going to be unavailable this week, so we're rolling out Matt Watkins. And Watkins and I are going to talk all about the transfer portal because that is literally the only thing going on in college basketball news these days, well, other than the coaching carousel, which is always entertaining. Matt, down there in central southwest county, St. Louis County, how are you?
Doing all right. How are you?
I am well. I'm doing well. It's a little gray here. The skies are cloudy. It's misting, raining, and all that kind of stuff, which absolutely sucks. But it's been a pretty eventful news week so far. We've had multiple sort of things happening. I think we could probably start a little bit with the news of John Calipari officially accepting the position at Arkansas. So Eric Musselman went to USC because Andy Enfield went to SMU because SMU fired their second year coach who was by all means successful in his second year. And so all that led to John Calipari in Kentucky basically getting their divorce. I think both sides are relieved. And certainly it opens up a lot of news in and around Kentucky, which is a big, big name in the sport. Guys are asking out of letters of intent. They're decommitting. And so now we have all this stuff going on. And then, oh, by the way, a former five-star kid from Kansas City by the name of Mark Mitchell dropped his name into the transfer portal after two, really pretty solid years at Duke. And so he's in the portal. And all of this stuff is happening. Meanwhile, we still have, this idea that Missouri is looking at, Javon Porter, Terrace Reed. They've already got a commitment from Jacob Cruz. Matt, let's start with the kid from the Kansas side of Kansas City, our good friend Mark Mitchell, and sort of him dropping into the portal. What was your sort of initial reaction there?
I guess a little surprised. He's had a good career at Duke. He's a good college basketball player. And I guess when you're at Duke and you're going into your junior year and you are classified as a good college basketball player, you're probably going to get recruited over. And I think to some extent that happened. I mean, obviously Duke is going to bring in a bunch of blue chip prospects every year, including next year,
Flag,
who is the bluest of blue chip prospects. So I think Mark probably saw his time and role in Duke's offense and defense for that matter, kind of diminishing or at least not growing how he would hope. So I guess in all, it's not totally surprising, but still, when you get a former five-star kid who's, he was playing well this year.
He started a lot of games there. He was not like some guy who struggled to sort of find his role. He had a defined role. Maybe it's not the role he felt was going to get him to the next level, but he was certainly an important player for them the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he was kind of the do-it-all type guy for a team of pretty – how do I classify it? He had a lot of talent around him. So, someone has to do the dirty work. Someone has to do the things that not everyone else wants to do to make a team successful, and they ended up making it to the Elite Eight. So they were, by all accounts, a good team. But, I mean, when you look at his usage profile, it's mostly cuts, offensive rebounds, running in transition – and just an assortment of non-Mark Mitchell-centric plays on offense. That I think those play types added up to 60% of his offense. So, in not he wasn't in a huge usage role as it was. So, you know, when you bring in, you lose Filipowski, but you bring in Flagg, it's not going to change. In fact, it might diminish. So, in addition to the other players that they have, but, you know, that's just the age of, college basketball in 2024. I think 10 years ago, he would have been happy, content to be a junior at Duke on a really good team with a bunch of good guys coming in, but that's not the game anymore. So he entered the transfer portal and here we are.
So a quick look over, you know, his statistical profile. He was not a prolific three-point shooter. He shot at a decent clip as a freshman, about 35% on only 54 attempts, which is not very many. It's, you know, not quite two a game. His offensive rating, though, as a freshman, 110, so that'd be 1.1 points per possession. It bumped up to 1.17 or 117.3, if you like the KenPom style. On just 20% of possessions, effective field goal percentage good, true shooting percentage good. I mean, these are all like national rank top 300 levels, low turnover rate, good block rate, doesn't commit a lot of fouls, draws a good amount of fouls, does get to the free throw line. You know, a nearly 60% shooter from the field. Like you said, a lot of those aren't really like him creating shots so much as cleaning shots up. But you have to think that a guy like that, if he is getting into the transfer portal, he is probably going to be looking for a place where his role is going to be a little bit different than it was at Duke. Mm-hmm. And coming out of high school, I mean, he was like a top 15, top 20 level player. And I think, you know, maybe seeing some of his like development stall at Duke and not, you know, being able to kind of take another step into a guy who can have the ball in his hands a little more, you know, was probably a deciding factor. And oh, by the way, his old AAU teammate and another KCK kid just had a breakout season after basically two similar years at Indiana. Like, I think Tamar Bates, we've covered extensively, goes to Indiana, is a role guy on some good teams, you know, plays not even like Robin to Trace Jackson's Davis's Batman, but you know, maybe Alfred. But you know, like being a good player on a good team and then going to Missouri, obviously Missouri didn't have a very good year. We all know that. But being able to see like your friend, your former AAU teammate, go to a place where they changed his role, they changed how he was used, and him excelling in that role certainly is something that is going to open the eyes of a lot of prospects, especially when there's that, you know, that connection between the two.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, when you look at the transfer portal, or at least how I look at it for the, we'll call the upper third, the guys that have legitimate high major aspirations, you know, they're looking at it basically from a financial perspective, whether it's the NIL payments that they could get going into the portal that they're not getting at their current school, or just perhaps more importantly, the future earnings that they have at stake of wanting to go professional. You look at a player like Mark Mitchell and, you know, what's his NBA future right now? I'm not a big NBA guy, but I know that for a guy who's not super athletic, he's athletic, but not a freak by any means. He doesn't really shoot the ball well. His jumper needs some work, both result-wise and release-wise, we'll call it. But he's not really, or hasn't proven to be, much of a playmaker with the ball in his hands. And, you know, when you look at that as an NBA guy, like, what's your calling card? What's going to get you paid? And I don't know that Mark really has something like that yet. So if that's not going to happen at Duke, it behooves him to go look someplace that says, hey, we can help you add this facet to your game to get you to the next level. You know, you look at Mizzou in recent years with Kobe Brown. Kobe Brown was a very good college player, even on a bad Mizzou team in, what was that, 2022, his junior year. Mm-hmm. He put up good numbers, made the All-SEC second team, I believe. But he never really had a strong shot of being drafted, because when you look at a player like that, he can't shoot. He was shooting 22-23% from outside. Dennis Gates comes in, not attributing it to anyone necessarily, but voila, Kobe Brown shoots 40%, goes in the first round. It's just, you have to have something at that size, at that position, to really differentiate yourself from the rest of the league. And I think that's what Mark is probably looking for this spring. So, you know, you look at, well, it's Mizzou went 0-19. True. But this isn't high school recruiting where guys are looking at the prestige of the program. They want to brag to their friends about this. This is nuts and bolts time. Like, I want to play basketball for a career. How can I get there?
Yeah, and I think certainly, you know, we're aware that there's interest, obviously, on Missouri's side. There, why wouldn't there be? There's always going to be interest when really talented guys hop into the portal. But the good news is there's interest on the, you know, the Mitchell side of things as well. And, you know, like Missouri was a part of the picture on the initial recruitment. You know, I did sort of say on the, you know, the Rockin' Plus forums, you know, that our information at the time was basically that it was like Duke, 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 UCLA, Duke, Duke, Mizzou. UCLA has some pull. He has some family out on the West Coast. UCLA is not looking to be involved this time around. They're pretty focused on Eric Daly, who's a guy that was very popular for us. Oklahoma State, sort of combo forwardy guy. Yeah, very similar player. UCLA is hot and heavy on him. I think they're going to work it out. If it doesn't work out for whatever reason, I think they also have another player who might be ahead of Mitchell. But certainly Missouri might be able to put themselves in the driver's seat if they're able to sort of pursue this aggressively. Now, is he visiting?
Is that a question?
Yeah, like
questions for me.
Yeah,
I would have to assume that if this progresses, yes, there will be a visit. But you know, we don't know that at this point in time. He entered the portal yesterday. I'm sure he probably gave it some thought beforehand, and these things don't just miraculously happen. Like, it's not just no one knows who Mark Mitchell is, and then all of a sudden he enters the portal. All these coaches are like, oh, he's pretty good. Let's go talk with him. Yeah. You know, there's a lot more to it than that. But, you know, I think being that this is a new staff, I think a campus visit is probably required. You know, I know he's been to Mizzou before. I know he knows guys there, but this is one of those things, again, it's a business decision. So you want to see the coach and the staff have a really good plan for how they want to get you to the next level. I would say at some point there will be. We'll have to wait and find out. The breaking of visits taking place come one of two ways, and the information comes from one of two places. Either the player talks to one of the large national recruiting sites or individuals, or the coach tells them. So, you know, we believe that there was going to be some movement this weekend on the visit front. And what do you know? Here comes Marquise Warwick.
Did we ever figure out how, like,
I think Harris said that, and all of a sudden, here I am saying his name, and I'm like, I wish I had paid more attention to that. But, but yes, he just announced via one of these, again, large sites that he will be visiting this weekend. So you can kind of feel it out for when something's going to happen. You kind of get a feel for it. You hear things from various places, and they're like, yeah, I think this is going to happen, but you're never going to confirm it until someone's on campus and they get seen, or they can't deny it anymore.
Well, and I would also add, like, when it comes to this sort of information, that guys like Warwick are a lot more likely to broadcast their recruiting, and guys like Mitchell, who went through it already, you know, like the really, really high level guys,
right?
That, you know, their initial recruitment was covered by all the national outlets. They tend to honestly be quieter. You know, I think you could probably see that a lot with, like, Caleb Love last year is a good example. You know, like, Caleb was a guy who went into the portal, leaving North Carolina. Like, we knew about the interest between Mizzou and the Loves, and we knew there were other schools involved. Like, I think, you know, you had heard, heard that, you know, Michigan was involved, and then, you know, but nobody knew if, like, when he went up there. He just went up there, and next thing you know, he's committed, and that's just sort of, you know, how it happens. And I think, you know, basically what it is the higher level guys, it is very, very much a business decision. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I am not interested in, like, the publicity. I want to get to this place. I want to work on my game. I want to get my NIL check, and I want to get to work. And I think a lot of those guys approach it. I think we're probably going to have a similar situation. And you're kind of even seeing it a lot with like Terrace Reed. I mean, Reed, there's been very little out of his camp. Mm-hmm. I know that it leaked that that he was on campus, and it turned out, like you said, like somebody spotted him, and he was on campus in Kansas State. And so it's just like, okay, like that's kind of how it happened. So we've got our spotters in and around Columbia, and hoping that we'll get clued in to anybody who we're not really aware of that might be visiting. But yeah, guys like Warwick tend to be a little bit more like they'll talk to who's our guy, you call him Sam 2.0.
That's his Twitter handle, name, as far as I'm concerned.
it's the 247 high school hoops. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great work. You should follow him if you're not already.
And Sumpto Cyril has been released from his letter of intent. Just pulling up Twitter here. I was going to see if I could find that guy's handle.
Spotters, it reminds me of right after Dennis Gates was hired, and we had someone actually on staff here see Sean East on campus, and we were all talking about that. And then later that day, the bat signal comes out, and we're like, oh, it must be Sean East. It was actually DeAndre Golston who committed that day, even though Sean East was on campus. So that kind of threw us for a loop, even though it eventually happened there shortly thereafter. Yeah. It's, you know, you can know who's on campus. You can literally lay eyes on him, and you get a commitment, and it's not even him. You know, like, well, all right, fair enough.
Yeah. We Lord knows we've been there with thinking that a commitment was one thing and ends up being something completely different. So let's talk about the other really kind of big news today, mm-hmm. which was, let me pop this banner up here. Jaden Quaintance, familiar name, 5-star freshman, spurned Missouri back in what was it, December or something? November. He signed early, I think. He ended up signing early, so it was November. Yes. So Jaden Quaintance committed to Kentucky. His father was very much steering that boat, big fan of Cal and the Kentucky brand. Cal is no longer a part of the Kentucky brand. But Cal does have a huge NIL budget at University of Arkansas now. They are reporting it is like between $5 and $7 million, which that's a lot. You know, that would definitely, you know, be the top in the SEC. You know, I think Missouri was probably in like, I think the article said that Missouri was kind of towards the top of the SEC this year. And I'd be a little skeptical that they were spending as much money as they were, but, you know, who knows? I think the average tends to be probably between $1.5 and $2.5 million, somewhere in there for, you know, the upper tier schools. So it's basically double that and more. Certainly gives Cal deep pockets. Quaintance, I don't really know what to think here, because Missouri is going to be really young, and they were still pursuing Quaintance. He is a guy you're going to have for 2 years. That's hard to turn down. He's a certified pro. He's a guy that you're definitely like going to play if you get him. He's going to play all over the place because he's really, really good. I mean, he's not like a deft ball handler or anything like that, but he's a guy that can make a lot happen defensively right away. And if he can develop his offensive skills, like just an absolute dominating talent. But I don't know. You think Missouri has a shot with this guy?
Of all the guys we're going to talk about tonight, I would say he's the lowest. Just me personally. You know, Mizzou did recruit him well. A lot of this information can be owed to our absentee Matt tonight. But Mizzou did a really good job recruiting him. I think the family was into Dennis Gates. I think the player himself was into Dennis Gates. You know, but Kentucky hasn't been Kentucky of recent years as far as wins, tournament success, and what have you. They're still a very good program, or have been a very good program under John Calipari. Maybe not as good as the Kentucky fans want it to be, but
they were still a three seed.
The thing about Cal is he was still putting guys in the NBA. You know, if you look at any coach in the college basketball ranks right now, who would you be most comfortable about putting you into the NBA if you were a five-star coming out of high school? Krzyzewski's gone. Jay Wright's gone. Bill Self, you know, that's a fair argument, but sheer volume, John Calipari, you know, especially at Kentucky.
And the thing, John Calipari will let you know about that too, that there's the amount of money that are tied up in Kentucky players' contracts is a substantial number.
And you had that combined with the fact that he was coaching a blue blood institution that had won recent national championships and up until 2020 was easily one of the best programs in the sport, top five. You know, so when you look at that, I think the decision's kind of easy. Now you take Cal out of there and put him in Arkansas, he's still going to get guys. He's got the money to do it. Cal knows how to recruit. It's the one thing that I always chuckle at. Like, you know, I saw a tweet the other day and shared it when someone's like, oh God, John Calipari can finally recruit now that he's got all this money at NIL at Arkansas. Like, that's never been a problem. He's always been able to do that. It's just that he skews more towards high school talent versus portal guys. And the portal guys he got have been hit or miss. You know, Antonio Reeves was very good. Oscar Tshiebwe was very good statistically. He may not have been the best fit for what they were trying to do, but still an elite player. So you look at look at Arkansas now. How quickly can he get that going there? Is it this class? Is he going to bring in the number one class? Is ever going to follow him there? I don't think so, but I think a lot of them will. And the question to me is, though, when you look at that, Arkansas has zero players on the roster right now. None. Not a high school signee, not a walk-on, not a scholarship player, not a transfer, none. They have no players. It is April 10th. The portal is well underway, and you have a coach who hasn't really embraced the portal, at least successfully compared to some of his counterparts. So when you look at that roster, if you're a high school recruit right now, and like, what's it going to look like next year? We have absolutely no idea who's going to be on the team. So it does take a little bit more of a leap of faith than, say, Kentucky, who, you know, they – lose a lot of guys after 1 year, but they bring a fair amount back and they've got the machine going where they've got five number one, top five, whatever prospects coming in. Arkansas, we don't know, you know, so as far as Jaden Quaintance goes, you know, I think there's a little bit more hesitation with me than he's just going to follow Calipari. That said, everyone in the country would love to add him, and it's going to be an uphill battle for Mizzou despite the good relationship.
Yeah, I think if Missouri was coming off a better season there, you know, I might feel a little better about it. But when you couple, so there's a couple things. You couple the amount of young players they do have coming in, the positions of the players that they have coming in, and you have the potential to go out and sort of bolster kind of like the, you know, the interior size, like we'll just say like the 3-4-5 position. They've already kind of done that with Jacob Cruz, who's sort of that like 3-4 hybrid. we sort of look at Mark Mitchell as that, that 3-4 hybrid kind of guy. You know, Quaintance is a guy who can play the 5, can play the 4. Eventually, he could probably play the 3. So you're also just kind of reaching a point where there's a lot of bodies that are kind of in this round. And even like some of the guys that they haven't signed, like, you know, there's still a possibility of Javon Porter. Terrace Reed. Like, you know, so it's just like there's a lot going on. And, you know, obviously Missouri still has to like get commitments from guys and still has to sign guys and make sure that, you know, they're ready to go on that side of it. I tend to think that you pursue them and you see if you can land it. I'm always sort of the guy who's like, you know what, if you can get talent, you get the talent, you figure it out later. But I sort of see this as a situation where I feel like you probably have to feel better about where you're at with Mitchell. You're definitely going to feel better where you're at with Porter. And even though, like, you know, Quaintance may be, you know, eventually like a higher ceiling on both, a better defender right out of the gate. You know, that's still something where it's just like, what do they say? A bird in hand is better than two in the bush. It's sort of like kind of one of those things. I would put the odds as long on Quaintance. Not impossible, but long. And realistically, if you re-engage and Hammond and the misses are like, yeah, like we still love Dennis Gates, we want to sign up, then you take him. Which I think is a kind of a natural sort of pivot for what I really kind of wanted to talk. And I think we kind of went long in both those spots. But really, like, this is what it kind of comes down to for me is what do you do at the 4 spot? Missouri's roster, nobody is transferred.
Not yet, anyway.
Right. Like, there's still time. There's still time. But, like, you're coming off a historically bad season, and everyone is just like, no, like, I'm still on board. And, like, that's great. It's great. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think it speaks to some of the things that we talked about kind of during, you know, like the last couple of months about, like, the culture and, you know, the approach, and, you know, guys were still bought in and, like, they were showing up, they were competing hard. Those are all good signs. But, you know, Trent Pierce is a hybrid combo forward. Aiden Shaw, technically, I think we would kind of classify him as like a hybrid combo forward. You like to call him a post. Well, he plays like that. He does play like that.
The numbers call him a post.
Yes.
As weird as that is, 6'8", athletic freak Aiden Shaw was most similar to a guy like Omar Ballo. Yeah.
He does not
it
shoot
blows
outside
my mind,
of
but
like,
it's true.
Yeah.
But it's true.
Yeah. still, you know, we'll loosely, and that's why I've always kind of liked the term like combo forward, right? Like, you know, it's I think somebody who, you know, athletically can guard the 3 spot if you need, is probably maybe more comfortable in the 4 spot. And then in a pinch, if you need him at the 5, they can do that too. Like, that's sort of like the combo. So Aiden Shaw, Trent Pierce, Jordan Butler played a few possessions at the 4. I think, you know, like, if you bring in a wider, sort of bigger body, you could see him getting minutes at the 4. Jake Cruz, you know, and wing. Now we're talking about what's that?
Wing.
I mean, he's 6'8". He's 6'8".
That's a good thing.
good size. He's like, he's not like a super plus athlete. So like, yeah. I would call him a combo forward. He's not somebody I want guarding the other team's best player. but he can hold his own on the wing if he needs to, probably like more comfortable in that 4 spot. So that's, I mean, we're already at like 4 or 5 dudes. And now you're talking about Mark Mitchell, who's kind of that guy. You're talking about Javon Porter, who's kind of that guy. Mm-hmm. You're talking about Jaden Quaintance, who's definitely that guy. What do you do? Are we talking about one of these guys? Are we talking about two of these guys? Because you've already got one in the transfer portal class now in Cruz. What do you do?
Well, just the way I conceptualize it, and I think this is helpful, at least for me, to kind of explain where I'm coming from. I look at the front court as three different positions. I'll take the wings out. Don't care about the guards for the moment right now. I look at three types. You kind of have to have size. I don't put a strict measurement on it, but 6'8 is kind of the smallest that I'm looking at for these guys when I'm looking at them statistically. I've got the the postmen, the guys who are more traditional back to the basket players who don't really create any offense either off the bounce or off the pass, and they don't really shoot from outside. Those are the post guys to me.
That's going to be like Umar Ballo. It's, you know, for Missouri's purposes, it'll be, you know, Peyton Marshall.
Terrace Reed would be an addition into that category, yeah, at least for now. Again, how they profile statistically.
I didn't even bring up Marcus Allen.
Yeah, he's kind of more of a wing. We'll
move
out of this for now. But then we go to the stretch guys, which are the same guy, except they can shoot from outside. It's the same profile. You add in the shot. And then I look at the combo forwards as guys who are of that same profile but can make plays off the bounce or off the pass. They can't necessarily shoot, but they can dribble, they can pass, which gives you the ability to flex them outside, make plays from the elbows, whatever. Kobe Brown was the epitome of the ideal combo forward in this offense. He could shoot, he could pass, he could dribble, and he could play inside. He was a little undersized, but, you know, for our purposes here, I think that's kind of how I break down those three. So when you look at a Mark Mitchell, believe it or not, despite his outside shot, he kind of fits in that middle category. He has shot a little bit from outside. He's not a true post. He's not really a playmaker. So I kind of slot him in that stretch category. That's where I would also slot Javon Porter. He can pass a little bit better, or has passed a little bit better, but, you know, he's not really a playmaker. Terrace Reed goes into the posts for now. And Quaintance can probably flex between the stretch to the interior post man. Maybe he can develop the passing, the dribbling aspect, but we'd have to bring Matt Harris in on that since he's watched literally every second of every minute that he's played. So that's kind of how I look at it. So if you look at those positions, you've got Jordan Butler, who he didn't shoot it well, but again, he shot it from outside, more of a stretch guy. You've got Trent Pierce, stretch guy, pure and simple. It wasn't much of a playmaker, but did shoot it. A little light for the inside, but still got good length. Aiden Shaw, believe it or not, was our only post guy from a year ago because he didn't shoot, he didn't dribble, and he didn't pass. You know, Connor Vanover slid into the stretch five. So it's, when you look at it like that, I think it kind of breaks it down. But to me, that's less important than the actual number of spots you have available. I don't think you can take more than two post guys, or two forwards, I should say. You've already got Jacob Cruz. You're really light at guard right now. Your entire guard backcourt dynamic right now is Anthony Robinson and T.O. Barrett. Sophomore who had an up and down freshman year, talented, promising, yes. Proven, no. T.O. Barrett hasn't stepped foot on the court. I think the staff realizes it. I think we realize it, that they're going to take two guards. You know, so when you add in that to Cruz, you're already at three guys. I don't see them getting 6, 7, 8 guys in the portal this year. I just do not see it happening. So, you know, it's kind of how you mix those two additions in the front court in. What roles do they have? You know, if you bring in a Mark Mitchell and a Terrace Reed, they play a little bit differently in the front court. Mark Mitchell and Javon Porter play kind of similarly. Javon's a better shooter. Mark is better on the inside, but, you know, you could see a little bit of a difference there. But Quaintance, he's flexible enough that you could put him in multiple spots, or multiple roles, I should say, to be effective. So long story short, I don't know, but there is a bulk of bodies, if not in width, in amount, at the Missouri front court spots right now. So I'd look for them to add two. Who they will be, who knows? But, you know, there's the options have doubled since the last time we spoke about this.
Right. And, you know, I will say, like, from our perspective and from my perspective, definitely, I don't want to speak for anybody else. I think, like, this sort of also couples with a little bit of where I would critique the way that they address their freshman class in the fall. And, you know, obviously hindsight being 2020, you don't know that you're going to go through the season that they went through. You don't know that you're just going to have a miserable experience trying to get through conference play. And each of the five guys that are signed and coming in, like, I understand all of the additions in a vacuum, right? Like each one in a vacuum, but collectively, like, five spots is a lot on freshmen. If you were going to pursue Quaintance, I think you're like, if you're going to do it again, if you're going to press Dennis Gates to do it again, I kind of feel like that at that point, he's probably going to have to make a decision on either Burns or Marshall. Mainly because, like, you know, you're not really getting great ball handling from any of the other, you know, the three, you know, guard wing guys that you're bringing in. You know, Barrett, you know, by all accounts is a lot more of a combo guard at this point. Does he project as a point guard? Perhaps. You know, Honor is a wing. You know, Marcus Allen is a wing, maybe like a hint towards the, you know, the combo forward spot. But I understand, like, you know, they've had these struggles with rebounding. They've had sort of interior defense, you know, trouble, and wanting to kind of make sure that you can increase that size. They went ahead and took an additional post. And now you're at the point where you don't have enough ball handling on your roster. You're actively pursuing at least two guards. You have guys that are kind of in that mix that did play some that were like on the roster that you like their talent, you know, specifically the three freshmen from this past year, the guys that will be sophomores. At some point you've got to be able to say like, no, like we like you a lot, but like we need to make sure that like I don't think you can take more than five guys. And if you're going to pursue Quaintance, then it should have been four. I think three to four freshmen every year should be your goal. And then you try to retain as much of those guys, try to recruit as high a level of guys as you can. And when you take that fifth guy, like it just, there's only so many minutes. So, you know, unless they're going to get to, you know, like 16 spots, and using NIL money to like have walk-ons, like, you know, realistically, like Javon Porter could very easily be a walk-on. You just pay for their schooling with NIL. But it definitely creates a glut in an area where they've been short the last few years. And now you need ball handling.
Yeah. Looking at it, I agree with you that the freshman class is, there's just a lot there and it skews towards the front court side. But I will say that through 2 years in the portal, Mizzou really struggled to bring in big guys. And the reason why it's really hard to bring in big guys in the portal, there's just not that many of them. They're hard to find. They're even harder to land.
It does feel like this cycle, though, does have way more than previous years.
Which is ironic, especially now that we've got three, maybe four guys who would project well on Mizzou's roster right after Mizzou takes a large freshman class in the front court. But I look at it like they recognize that struggle. They had a good year. They were able to recruit high school kids. They were receptive to what Mizzou was selling. And they realized that, you know, we need to develop these guys. So we brought in a couple guys who we can develop. Is it the best strategy in hindsight? Who knows? But I at least see that there was some sort of thinking behind it that, hey, let's stockpile a few of these guys, develop them, and then we won't have to scramble in April and May. And when Caden Shedrick turns us down, go look at Jimmy Bell, then go look at Connor Vanover, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we've got those guys. And when you look at the portal, wings, shooting guards, those guys you can find in spades. You know, I sift through them every day. And I would say those two positions, even though they're kind of the same thing, are probably like, 50 to 60% of the quality guys coming in the portal. You know, we've got a large combo forward class this year in the portal, a lot of skilled 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys who can do multiple things. But the post group and the point guard group, the post group especially is small. You know, you've got Terrace Reed in there and a few other big names. But point guards are kind of difficult to find as well, and they're always highly prioritized. So, you know, looking at high school recruiting and bringing it back to that, recruit point guards, recruit big men. And you can always find adequate replacements in the portal for everything else.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to, like, if you were to make a priority list out of the remaining options kind of in the front court, we'll kind of include anyone that might sort of be tangentially connected to a wing spot. So Mark Mitchell included. Who would be your priority? Or are you basically saying, like, this is what we have for the spot, or taking the first guy to commit?
Do I have to factor in likelihood of signing?
Let's start with not.
Okay. You know, at this point, Quaintance is probably the top priority there. You know, he's got a lot of things. He's got versatility. He's a very good defensive player, and he can guard both big men and more skilled, smaller forwards. So I think you could anchor your defense with him. And if you were looking at a guy like that, I think as the number two, you'd probably want to look at a guy like Javon Porter, because his skill set is completely different than what Jaden Quaintance is. You've got a guy who, albeit was a little bit shakier shooting the ball last year, a 6'11 guy who can dribble, who can pass a little bit, and who can shoot jumpers. You put those two guys together, you've got a nice contrast. Now, if Mark Mitchell is the priority, Javon Porter may not be the best fit to go alongside of him. You know, it's just, it kind of is a one in, one out type scenario about, you know, who fills the first spot. But Quaintance, I think, would be your top priority. If not him, I think Mark Mitchell is probably the second player, as far as I would take him and figure out the next spot after him.
Yeah. And then I think, like, the next sort of, like, you know, wondering is, you know, what do we think, what do we think is going to happen here? Because I do think, what you want and what reality is are often two different things. And, you know, and that's something that you also kind of have to learn. Even though, like, we know Missouri's name, image, and likeness situation is healthy, that they're still, it's going to be tougher to kind of land your top priorities, because there are other programs in the SEC who have just had more success. So if you could, if you can get $250,000 from Missouri, you could also get $250,000 from Florida or from Auburn. If the money is the same, then you're probably going to choose the team that went to the NCAA tournament last year.
Assuming role is the same, I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you and I both think that it is unlikely that Missouri signs Jaden Quaintance.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
If you can get Mark Mitchell on campus, you can get him signed, you would take him?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like right away?
Mm-hmm. No hesitation whatsoever.
What if the next person that wants to commit is Terrace Reed?
Now you've got me in a pickle. I don't mind Terrace, and I know I feel like I'm constantly giving the cons to bringing in Terrace. The thing that makes me question a little bit about that is that these guys play different roles, and I will say that flat out. Mark Mitchell is not a traditional interior back to the basket big man. Terrace Reed has been that so far at Michigan. We've talked about Terrace Reed getting on campus if he were to choose Mizzou, shedding some pounds, gaining some lateral quickness. To me, what you get when you do that is Mark Mitchell. You know, a guy who doesn't really shoot outside, who doesn't really create for others, but is quicker, can defend really well, runs really well. You know, so you get two guys who are almost giving you the same thing. I mean, I think it depends on what your other options are, but in that scenario, yeah, I'd probably do it. But you also are understanding here that you're not really going to get any playmaking out of your front court. You're not really going to get any shooting out of your front court. So you're going to have to kind of change what you do. But I think with that combination, you could at least squint and see Mark Mitchell having kind of a renaissance in his career, you know, maybe fixing the form on his jumper and becoming a little bit more reliable outside. And then if he does that, you've got a really good tandem.
Just to kind of jump in, because, you know, like, you know, Terrace at Michigan was listed at 265. And 6'10". Mark Mitchell last year was listed at 235 and 6'9". Now they have pitched Terrace as we'd like you to lose 20 to 30 pounds and improve your quickness. So really, like, you are getting to a point now. Mark Mitchell has at least attempted 3-point shots.
Mm-hmm.
Terrace is probably a better rebounder. He's probably a little bit better defensively around the basket. But when you kind of look at it from that standpoint, it is kind of remarkable that you're basically like 6'9 or 6'10, 235. I find it, you know, kind of fascinating that you could have, you know, Tamar Bates and, you know, Aiden Shaw and Mark Mitchell and Terrace Reed all in the same roster as like the Konzo Martin all-star misses.
Well,
if only we could coax Caleb Love back into the and
let
sign
me blow
him
your mind. Tamar Bates, Caleb Love, Aiden Shaw, Terrace Reed, and Mark Mitchell, all Missouri State Bears next year with Konzo Martin. I'm not being serious, but it would be wild to just think about that. Considering Konzo Martin recruited all of those guys pretty heavily, had varying degrees of finishes somewhere between second and fourth with all of them. If he lands two of them, career trajectory very well changes at Mizzou, doesn't land any of them. And then they all decide, you know what? We really like Konzo. He's the one guy that we all liked, and we all just want to go play in Springfield.
Yeah, we all really liked him. We just didn't want to play for him then. Now that we're older and wiser. I think that wraps up a bit of our conversation on the four spot. It is interesting, you know, because it is one of those things where it was a priority. And I think for like the last few weeks, we've been like Jevon Terrace. And now all of a sudden, like, you know, Mark Mitchell, and you hear that there is mutual interest, that does throw a wrench in, because I don't think you have unlimited spots. I realize Dennis wants to have like a big, deep roster, but that's a lot of people to kind of keep involved. And, and certainly the more bodies you add from the portal, like the fewer opportunities you see for younger guys. And I think it's going to be really important to make sure that you're getting opportunities, for younger guys who I think we all still kind of believe in their talent. They still need point guards. Like, they still need somebody who can dribble the basketball up the court, not turn it over, initiate offense,
make a play every now and then.
It does seem like work is a priority if he's going to be hitting campus this weekend. Tony Perkins, I think, is kind of trying to wait it out with IU a little bit. I don't know how that's going to go for him, because it does seem like IU has a lot of options, or at least they think they have a lot of options. They certainly have a lot of money. So it'll be interesting to kind of see. I don't really know. I think we're all like you and I, and I feel like I can speak for Matt Harris here as well, as a little disappointed and a little disappointed in the approach with the ball handlers so far. And not that we don't like Perkins. I think we all like Perkins. I don't know that I would classify Warwick as a, like, even as a combo guard. And I feel like you need more ball handling. But that's not what they're doing, at least not so far. So I don't know if you have anything else you want to touch on with the point guard spot. We are kind of getting close to the end here.
Nope. I do like Tony. I think he'd be a good fit. I think his fit kind of matters with who else they're bringing in. I'm not sure that Warwick and Perkins are the best synergistic effect at the backcourt, but, you know, who knows? Maybe they are. I'm just a guy on a podcast with a royal blue shirt on, repping my big blue nation over here.
Or is that SLU colors now? Because I know you met your boy Josh Schertz.
It's true.
Out having dinner the other night. I know this is not a SLU podcast, but we are both St. Louis. I'm a native. You're a transplant now.
Transplant.
But yeah, you were out for dinner and met Josh Schertz, and even saw him with a couple, or at least one assistant that turned out to be, what was that, Boisvert you saw? Zach mm-hmm. Boisvert?
Yep.
Yeah.
I could have broken the news and beat Pete Thamel, but I didn't. I will
say that as a fan of basketball, and I grew up going to a lot of SLU games. When my brother finished playing in college, my parents, I think, were missing college basketball, going to a lot of college basketball games. I was still mm-hmm. playing, but my dad got season tickets with some friends, and so I went to a lot of SLU games growing up. I should also point out that my dad played at what is now Missouri State. Back then it was like Southwest Teachers College or something, and they played mm-hmm. NAIA. But at the time, Charlie Spoonhour was a manager, like assistant coach kind of thing. Back then there was a lot of blurred lines on some of those positions. So Spoonhour was like, he's not a family friend, but a family acquaintance. So when he got the job at SLU, like, my parents were like really, really involved in going to a lot of games. And so I grew up on a lot of SLU basketball. I hated Travis Ford as basketball coach. I don't know him personally, so I don't want to say that I hate him or who he is or anything like that. I don't know him. I don't like watching his teams play basketball. I am excited about Josh Schertz. I like watching good basketball. And he plays a really fun style. And
he does.
And Watkins, like, are we going to have little, dive cuts meet up at a SLU game this upcoming year? Watch us some Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
You know, we could just get Josh Schertz on the podcast.
Hey, now that you're such good friends.
We're best buds at this point.
You're one of three people he knows in St. Louis.
I have to imagine outside of big, big money boosters and faculty or staff members, I had to have been one of the first people to talk with him since he became SLU's head coach. He hadn't even been officially announced.
Yeah.
I guess he was announced, but he hadn't had his introductory press conference. And no one else recognized him when he came in, but I did immediately. I mean,
well, he is just kind of like a short, bald guy. So
he's
like
the most nondescript guy. And I'll tell you what, I've never been a SLU fan. I don't actively root for them, but I have no interest in seeing them succeed. It will be hard for me not to at least root for him because he is, you know, he's a new coach. Every guy is nice, but I've met many, many coaches over the years, and he is a genuinely nice guy. He coaches a great, exceedingly fun style of play. He's going to be bringing a bunch of guys from Indiana State who are a great team to watch. And he told me that they're, most of them are coming with. But, you know, it's just like, what do you dislike about this? And, yeah. You know, I can't really find much. Maybe that'll change. But I hope he has great success in 1 year and finds something bigger and better.
I hope he does not stick to the words of his press conference as he was talking about, you know, building a Gonzaga of the Midwest.
He could go coach Gonzaga after Fuse.
Hey, there you go. No, there for anybody who like wants to know more about shirts, he does have a really fascinating story. Like, absolutely fascinating. Was like a star youth tennis player and burnt out on tennis. His dad was apparently like a big tennis player. There's a really, really great pro. Was that CJ Moore that wrote that? Somebody could have been The Athletic, I think.
He typically does the best stuff.
Yeah. I feel like I probably definitely read it because it was like, oh, CJ wrote it. I feel like I have to read it. But no, I'm certain it was on The Athletic. Fantastic story. He is a really, really interesting guy. His background is wild.
He never played college basketball. I'm not even sure if he played high school basketball.
No, he did play college. Like it was, but it was weird. He didn't graduate high school. He had to get a GED and went to junior college to play. It's wild. His life is wild.
You could go read that story again.
Yeah, highly recommend reading the Athletic story. If you're an Athletic subscriber, is a really, really interesting guy. But we're done talking about SLU. that was probably the longest segment ever on SLU basketball. But yeah, so we're going to be keeping track of all the transfer portal stuff. We've got more deep dives coming. You know, thanks to Synergy, thanks to your subscriptions.
Yes.
If you are subscribing to Rockin' Plus, you are helping us pay for tools that, mm-hmm. that make these things possible. It is super, super cool.
Synergy is an amazing service, but it is not cheap. And we're not looking to profit off of this. You know, it helps offset our out-of-pocket costs to bring you what we want to bring you. And we think it's good, so.
Yeah, it's super cool. So if you're listening to this on like the regular podcast feed, you're not subscribed, head over to rockm.plus, get subscribed. You can check out all the stuff that's going on the forums. The basketball forums are hot and heavy. Football transfer portal is coming up, and we hope to have as good a coverage on that side as we do on the basketball side. Yeah, it's a little tougher to kind of get that stuff out of the football program than it is the basketball program. But you know, I think we're building a great thing. And so thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back next week. I don't know if you're going to join me next week or if I'm going to, you know, try to find
I think I'm going to be here for perpetuity with Matt Harris has basically quit and is the podcast.
He's moving to become a permanent resident and Everton fan from one sack program to the next.
going relegation while he's there.
yeah.
All right, no more soccer. We talked soccer.
Yeah. There is a chance that Everton gets relegated, mostly because they've gotten dinged a lot. But he's going to go watch them. Maybe he'll be back at some point. So we'll be back next week with more Portal Talk. Hopefully we've got commitments to talk about by then. It should be a busy weekend, at least for visits. You know, we know for sure on one, we are expecting at least probably a couple more that could happen as well. And we'll let
you
know.
At least next week.
Yeah, yeah. The dead period ends midnight on Thursday, so Friday should be a flood. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you on the forums. We'll see you on, you know, Rock'em Nation, Rock'em.plus, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Rock'em Radio, a proud partner of Fans First Sports Network. Rock'em Radio is the official podcast network of Rock'em Plus, a new and exciting subscription service provided by me and the other voices of Rock'em Radio. Please take a few moments to head over to Rock'em.plus and sign up for an account today. The cost is only $5 a month, and benefits include access to our live podcast, a subscriber-only message board, weekly newsletters, and more. If you enjoyed this episode of Rock'em Radio and would like to see more just like it beamed directly into your personal device, make sure to click the subscribe button below and tell your friends. Our podcast feed is available through the Apple Podcast app for iPhone, Google Podcast app for Android, whatever app you listen to your podcast. You can also find Rock'em Radio on Spotify. If you're looking for a podcast about your favorite team that is not the Missouri Tigers, Fan First Sports Network is your answer. A full podcast network loaded with the team-specific podcasts covering Major League Baseball, the NFL, NHL, NBA, MLS, and more. And we'll be back with more episodes of Rock'em Radio coming to you soon.